That's what I like to see, bullseyes, every time. And you can do the same thing with Byard Barrels. As long as you do your part, the custom barrels that you get from Byard Barrels will deliver award-winning accuracy shot after shot. Byard Barrel specializes in standard and 1-in-9-inch twist match-grade 22 long rifle barrels for the Ruger 10/22 and AR-15. If you want to win, visit their site at ByardBarrels.com. That's B-E-Y-E-R Barrels.com. Or you can call Clint at 360-374-9476 and tell him you heard it on the Shooting Bench, would you? Let him know that his advertising money is doing him some good.
Now for something completely different.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free, you can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea, you can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. But you can't take the sky from me.
Good evening to all of you, all my friends out there in JMR land and out in cyberspace, and those who will possibly be listening on the podcast. This is the Tinker, of course, and welcome to the Tinker's Shop. Today is the 4th of January of 2014, and, well, we're not going to have the classical musics and things of that sort that I played over the holidays. Today is start of a new year, and, well, I'll probably start the new year off with a rant here shortly. We've had some stuff that ran across tonight, an article that, shall we say, is of interest. And it's dealing with, dealing with our potentials for food. And what I'm doing here right now, I hope you'll excuse me, but I'm just queuing up a file here that should be relatively interesting. I just need to find it here. It's one of those cases where, since I'm a little, I've been somewhat, handicapped over the last few weeks here. Had my eye problems. So, there. Found my file, so that now I'll do my little bit of a rant here. Seems that good old European Union, they're starting to pull some routines. I'm having to censor myself here. My self-sensitive come back. Where they're starting to really clamp down on people for seeds. For a while here, they were pulling their harmonization for food supplements and, you know, vitamins and things of that sort. And they were basically busy trying to take herbs and supplements away from people because this is not harmonized. It's not registered with us. Well, now they're starting a routine with seeds. So let me do this. I'm going to go ahead and play this. And you guys are going to get a treat here. You're going to finally hear Tinkerbell. So, had her read it because I myself, I'm not real good at reading yet these days. And if I would have been trying to read it, you know, we would have been stumbling over this for, you know, 15 minutes. So, here we go. Oops. Okay, going to switch myself over here. So, next voice you'll hear, we Tinkerbell.
European Commission to ban heirloom seeds, criminalize plants not registered with government. The European Commission is changing the European Union's plant legislation, apparently to enhance food safety across the continent. This move has sparked a heavy opposition from many, saying that the measure will threaten seed diversity and favor large agrochemical businesses. This new law creates new powers to classify and regulate all plant life anywhere in Europe. You can view the entire proposal in the list of sources at the bottom of this article. The Plant Reproductive Material Law regulates all plants. It contains restrictions on vegetables and woodland trees, as well as other plants of any species. It will be illegal to grow, reproduce, or trade any vegetable seed or tree that has not been tested and approved by the government, more specifically, the EU Plant Variety Agency. This agency will be responsible for making a list of approved plants, and an annual fee must also be forwarded to the agency if growers would like to keep what they grow on the list. The new law basically puts the government in charge of all plants and seeds in Europe and prevents home gardeners from growing their own plants from non-regulated seeds. If they did, they would now be considered criminals. The draft text of the law has already been changed several times due to a large backlash from gardeners. This law will immediately stop the professional development of vegetable varieties for home gardeners, organic growers, and small-scale market farmers. Home gardeners have really different needs. For example, they grow by hand, not machine, and can't or don't want to use such powerful chemical sprays. There's no way to register the variety suitable for home use as they don't meet the strict criteria of the Plant Variety Agency, which is only concerned about approving the sort of seed used by industrial farmers. Ben Gable, director of the Real Seed Catalog. It seems the government is taking over everything. Virtually all plants, vegetable seeds, and gardeners are to be registered by the government. What's even more disturbing is that all heirloom seeds will be criminalized. This means that saving seeds from one generation to the next will become a criminal act. This law was written for the needs of the globalized farm seed industry, who supply seed by the ton to industrial farmers. It should not apply at all to seed used by home gardeners and small market growers. Freely reproducible seeds should be a human right. They are part of our heritage. I understand this is to protect the business of big agri companies, but registration and testing should be voluntary for all non-GMO, non-patented, and non-hybrid seed.
There you go, folks. This is something that we all need to be much more aware of. These guys are trying to continue to control our food, control our medicines, controlling possession of personal firearms. Seems like Europe is our testing ground for this sort of thing, and it's just getting more and more out of hand every time you turn around. It's where a lot of the stuff started out. Like I mentioned earlier, first they did it with, you know, vitamins and supplements and herbs in Europe, and now they're moving ahead to starting to control the foods. And this is not a good thing. These guys are, well, these bozos that are there seem to be owned body and soul by Monsanto. And possibly the international people who want to control the world. Like I said, they're starting to try and use Europe as their testing ground for this. They try it there, and if it flies, then they go ahead and try exporting it to this country. There's been talk over the past few months and years of starting to control vitamins and supplements in this country, just like they've been doing there in Europe. And just watch. The next step is going to be to go ahead and try pulling that same crapola here. So, you guys are all going to need to start thinking about getting your seeds, saving your seeds. How are you going to do it? How are you going to plant? This was done before in Europe. 1932, 1933. Joe Stalin, a.k.a. Uncle Joe, he was busy trying to basically do a genocide on the Ukrainian population. This is also known as the Holodomor, or the death by starvation. This seems to be a signature move for most tyrants. They want to have absolute control over their populations. So what do? First thing, they take away the means for the population to resist them. And then they go ahead and proceed from there. There's another person who has said similar things to what Joe Stalin said. Stalin had said, control the food and you control the people. Unfortunately, in this country, we've had a public figure here several years back by the name of Henry Kissinger, who also made the same statement. Control the food and you control the people. If you can take the people's food away, what are they going to do? They're going to do anything they possibly can to eat. They'll bow down and, well, I just won't even go there. But anyway, to continue. Why did the government in Russia under Joseph Stalin do this? They were afraid of Ukrainian nationalism there. Actually, what it was is people were fighting the confiscation of foods, and, you know, they had economic hardships there. Official estimates were, you know, saying, you know, well, 1 to 2 million. Some of the later estimates have come out that there was probably better than 3 to 4 million people that died directly of starvation. Another 6 to 7 million children died because of infant mortality because of, you know, starvation and damage because of the starvation. The lack of nutrition actually caused birth defects. So it's just, well, we need to start standing up for ourselves, standing up for everybody else, and working for something better. Here at the beginning of the show, I usually play a couple tunes there. The one there you probably recognize more than the other is that theme song from Serenity. Actually, it's from Firefly, which was basically a show that dealt with the aftermath of a rebellion, I guess you could say. Where you had the independents that were standing up against the central government. And in that one, unfortunately, they got beat, but they kept on fighting even afterwards. And I have seen a poster recently where they were basically saying, have you bought your brown coat yet? And that's my question to all of you. Have you bought your brown coat? That was the independents. They wore the brown coats. The other one is the March of Canberra. It's been around for quite some time. And, well, it's worth a listen to. perhaps you might learn something. Listen well.
To a marching drum, we'll win the war and pay the toll. We'll fight as one in heart and soul. Midnight mare and blood red roan, fight to keep this land your own. Sound the horn and call the cry. How many of them can we make die? Our axes flash, rocks will swing, shining armors piercing ring. Our horses run with a powder shield. Fight those bastards till they
There you go. sometimes I wonder if that shouldn't become our new anthem. What do you guys think? Think we should make that the anthem of the three percenters out here? Might get a few people's attention if people start singing that or playing that. Matter of fact, just recently, up on YouTube, Tinkerbell showed me a video that someone had made that used a lot of photos from different things. Actually, there's a couple different ones. There was one that was basically straight U.S. military, and then there was also one that's just basically almost a three percenter type. How would you call it? A video. That's basically how you put it. So that's what that is. And again, like I said, I do apologize for having a Winamp crash here. It seems to be a lot of that going around these days. Matter of fact, when it crashed, I even lost the chat room here on my machine. So managed to get Winamp back up so I could continue on. Okay, so I guess I should probably say that should stop my rant for the evening. I'll probably continue to rant in the future, but I should probably go ahead and proceed and do what I'd promised. I know last week I had mentioned that I would go ahead and be doing a show on, believe it or not, potato planters. And what I was going to be doing was actually doing up a set of not only photos of the one I have, but also some plans where people could literally put one together for themselves. That I'm afraid is going to have to wait until this next week so I can get some decent drawings made up. I have photos ready, but the photos just, you can't see clear enough on them what the things looked like. Also, I have another one that's a small seed planter. It's meant for corn and beans and things of that sort. Those, both the corn planter and the bean and potato planters, what they do is they would make life a lot easier for those of us who are getting older that are definitely going to have to be doing more gardening this coming year and the years to come. These things, they allow you to, once you get your soil tilled, literally to walk right along, and like with the potato planter, as fast as you can drop one into it, you stuff it into the ground, give it a twist, it plants a potato, and you take, you know, one step forward and you repeat the process, and it's literally almost that fast. And the one for beans and corn, just about as quick. So with that stuff said, why don't we do this? I'm going to go ahead, like I said, and start the fire starting and fire starters tutorial, I guess you could say, for the evening. So what we'll need to do is, you know, go out to the usual place, out to www.arlin, that's A-R-L-I-N-N, a hyphen, and then tower, tower.com, and then a / tinkers_shop. And the tinker in there is capitalized. You know, it's a case-sensitive website. And once you get there, you'll go ahead, go down to the bottom, and you'll see a link for fire starting and fire starters. And I guess because of my rant and also our lost time here earlier, I'm probably going to be breaking this into two sections because we're here now at 9:30. And, you know, this is probably well over an hour's worth of things to say. And as a matter of fact, being such that, let me do this. We're at 9:30. We're at where I should be doing a, oh, shall we say, a small station break. So, let me go ahead and put this in here, and then we should be good to go.
The phrase too late as a warning that silver and gold prices would soon skyrocket, and thus they have this year. With our current financial predicament, you might want to consider someone who supplies silver American Eagles and other precious metals, a family dealer up in Mount Vernon, Indiana. Just Measures Coin Shop. Call Bobby at 812-305-7091 or click on the link at my homepage at johngaultfla.com.
Okay, unbelievable. Unbelievable. It looked like it did it to me again here. And have we totally lost the signal once again? Okay. Okay, Tinkerbell says she can hear me now. I am beginning to have my severe doubts about Winamp. Okay, fire starting and fire starters. If we blow up again, I'm not quite sure what we'll do for this evening, but let's see, we're going to go ahead and call this part one for fire starting and fire starters. So we're just going to go ahead here and do the first portion. Okay, these days, you know, we have fire starting, and that's kind of a concern, especially if we're going to be traveling. And also just with the weather. Like, for example, here in our location here in central Wisconsin, tonight our low is supposed to be 2. And tomorrow, the high is supposed to be 2 degrees. That's Fahrenheit, not centigrade. And our overnight low tomorrow, I believe, is supposed to be about 19 below. So, you know, what would happen if a person's traveling? You know, how would you keep warm if you got stuck somewhere? And how many, and like here on the webpage, the very first section here, we got about modern fire making. And, you know, how many ways of fire starting or fire making can you think of? You know, right now, today, most people, when they think of fire making, you know, we've got our three examples here to the right. You know, book matches, safety matches, or a Bic lighter. And all three are good. And as a matter of fact, the safety matches in a book form, you know, they're good and fine. But you get the other ones, the next one down, that is, a strike anywhere wooden match. And those strike anywhere matches are actually starting to get hard to find. I don't know if this is another engineered shortage that the powers that be are pulling. I don't know. But I do know that in military manuals, they actually have, in a couple of them, I can't remember the number offhand right now, but they actually have where if a person is in an area and they run out of primers for their shells, there's actually a way of removing that phosphorus scrapey tip out or off of strike anywhere matches, and you can actually renew used primers for a firearm. Again, it's a little bit different than standard fire starting, but it's, again, a little bit more of a rant. Okay, now, a little bit further down here. Okay, you know, what was the oldest type of fires that people had? You know, obviously we have a, you know, a happy group of cavemen, a caveman family here in the picture. And we really don't know how and where the first fires were kindled by human beings. There's been some speculation or belief that perhaps, you know, some of the earliest fires were someone managed to, you know, scavenge some coals off of like a lightning struck tree where there was a fire, or maybe, you know, grass fires or whatever, prairie fires, and to where they kept the fires going. In some ethnography classes I'd taken, oh Lord, must be, you know, what, almost 45 years ago, 40 years at least, I do remember seeing one photo from some primitive peoples where there were some of the older folks that were basically, how would you call it, their part in the clan grouping was to protect and carry the fire with them. And the photos I saw were where they had almost like a clay basin or a small clay jar where in the mornings, you know, before they would, you know, get moving from, you know, point A to point B, coals would be scooped into this jar or basin and carried along throughout the day. And obviously they would keep feeding the coals, you know, a few twigs at a time just to keep this basket of coals going. And, you know, that would have been a very important job for someone to be doing. Of course, so, you know, someone else might have, some bright boy might have been throwing a rock at something and just happened to throw two of the right kinds of rocks, or throw a rock of the right type at another rock and struck sparks. You know, if you take iron pyrite, which is a natural mineral, and strike it against, you know, another stone, like a flint or whatever, you can get sparks. So they might have done some experimenting and gone, oh, okay, we can do this. Or maybe they just broke down and did it the hard way. You know, you hear jokes about rubbing two sticks together, which there is actually a type of method to where you can take a single stick, somewhat pointed, and twirl it, you know, rubbing it into wood to get a fire started, you know, get a coal going and feed it. And that'll bring us down here to the next portion here. It's another invention. This was, again, used in many parts of the world. It's mostly known to people in America here from the Native Americans, with a bow drill. And that's basically just a stick that's, you know, where you take a cord or a hunk of rawhide string, and you make a bow shape. You have another, you know, your turning stick, and use a stone as a pivot at the top to hold it down so you can get some pressure on it. And you have your fireboard down at the bottom, which is, again, notched out and hollowed out. And in there you would put some tinder of some sort. And this tinder, when you'd press down on the stone that you're holding the upright stick on, and you basically just saw it back and forth and, you know, spin that stick in the soft wood, and you can create a coal that way, you know, from friction, which would get your tinder started to light a fire. And just below that is a picture of a young lady who is demonstrating how to operate a bow drill. And again, since my eyes are pretty bad, I'm not going to be reading through the whole thing, but it's there for, I guess you could say, for your reference. Okay, let's go a little bit further down. Flint and steel. Again, that would be a little bit more of a development above and beyond of, you know, throwing one rock at another rock and trying to get sparks. And on here we got two shots. The one on the left is more of a quote-unquote traditional type of flint and steel. The one on the right is a more modern form. The left-hand one, that's just basically a squared-up polished piece of steel, and what looks like little pieces of rock around that are exactly that. Those are either flint or chert, and the way it's done is you get your striker and you do a fast, hard striking against the sharp edge of the flint. Obviously, it's not the greatest explanation of how it works, but that's basically what it works down to. I had a case a few years ago where one lady was trying to teach her husband how to work a flint and steel, and she was just giving him just grief. She was just like, "Hey, you white guys just don't know how to do it right." And she's like three quarters Chippewa, and so she just came over and she says, "Here, give me that." And she just like, ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. And she was just shooting sparks off that chunk of flint like crazy. Okay, on the right hand side, you have kind of a modern form of flint and steel. And this is, these are fairly commonly available. This particular one that's showing, I actually picked up at a place called Harbor Freight. And probably most of you know what Harbor Freight is. It's a place where you got a lot of low-cost tools. And I've heard some people say, the doggone things from Harbor Freight, they're all junk. Well, these magnesium fire starters, I've never had a problem with them. Because you just basically have to know how to use the darn things. How best to describe this? Okay, the lighter colored block, that's your magnesium block. And in the front edge of this, it's kind of hard to see, but you can probably see what looks like a long, thin rod that's basically glued or affixed into the side of the magnesium block. And also there's the black object next to it is actually a short, probably 3.5-inch section of like a hacksaw blade. And this hacksaw blade is, I've heard people, knock it, but I think it's people who don't really know how to use it, because I've seen people trying to use one of these, and they're using the tooth side of the hacksaw blade. It's not the side you use for striking a spark. The teeth on that are for being able to shave off or cut off little flakes of magnesium. It's very useful, say, for example, if your wood or your tinder is somewhat damp or wet. So what you can do is take your knife, scrape off a bunch of the magnesium, or you can use your saw blade there. Again, you saw away at it, and you'll, get a bunch of, little filings, magnesium filings, basically. Once you have your filings, if you're going to be using them on damp wood, damp tinder, whatever, kind of get those into a pile with your driest tinder you can have. At that point, you take that the back side of the saw blade, and you just give it a good strike. You know, start at one end and just scrape it along there as hard as you can. Might take you two or three tries of, you know, scraping along there, because you need to direct the sparks that are generated down into your tinder and to the magnesium filings. And I'll tell you what, once you get a couple sparks in there, it's going to light. And you can just about light wet wood with those. Okay, let's go down here a little bit further. Next pair of photos. The one on the left is some common dryer lint. You know, virtually everyone these days has a dryer at their house or available to them. I know some people, like Mom, you know, she hangs her stuff out on the line yet, so you know, she wouldn't have access to dryer lint. But most of the rest of us, we have a dryer. We know someone who has a dryer, or we live near a laundromat. Anyway, what I did here is I have just a small ball of dryer lint there. And that's on a folded up dryer sheet. Just basically gave me something to set it on. And what I did, you know, rethought it and thought, well, I'm just going to fold it one more time. So that's what I got on the right. I folded it again and just kind of crunched that ball of lint up a little bit. And I don't know if it's possible to see it on this photo or not, but you can probably see that it's kind of charred already. And that's actually a picture of it burning. And what I did was, it literally took me two strikes with my magnesium fire starter. I didn't use any magnesium. It just straight by itself. Took it, you know, and scraped some sparks off twice. And it lit right up. And actually, right now, my fireplace is still burning. I've had it going here for a couple days from when I did that photo. So, like I said, it's effective. It works. So let's go down here a little bit further. And what's that mean? Okay, we got 9:46 here, so we're probably going to go ahead here and just do this first portion today. So, our next section down here is tinders. You know, basically for a fire, you need a few things. You need tinder, something that you actually light to get your fire started. Then you'll have kindling, which is, you know, small pieces of wood. And then you'll have your regular firewood. But first thing you need, obviously, is tinder. And if you're out and about, and you are wherever, you know, whatever the situation is, you know, obviously if you're in the middle of a snowfield and trying to figure out how in heck am I going to make a fire, you know, it's a little bit more difficult, I'll grant you that. But still, you probably should be able to find some grasses, you know, wild grasses standing up through the snow. And obviously, if you're traveling, it wouldn't be a bad idea to gather some along the way. Obviously, with grass, if it's down low and buried by snow, it's going to be wet, so you're going to have a heck of a hard time starting it. So you probably have to gather enough that's tall enough, and it might take you a while, but if you have, you know, a good handful of dried grass, excellent fire starter. Okay, next thing here down, things that can be used for fire starting. Spark scraps. Again, if a person is, say, well, if you're in one location for a while, you might be having to split some wood. Or if you find some dead wood, you know, that's on the ground or whatever. Again, dry bark, worth its weight in gold at least. It's fairly easy to light and especially if you combine it with the dry grass or leaves. Also, a couple trees that are out there. You have birch bark. It's excellent as a tinder and for fire starting. If you can, you know, peel off a small strip of it or a small sheet of it, once you get, you can actually light that relatively easily, because the birch bark and poplar bark also, if you can find some that's peeling, they both have natural oils in them. And so it'll actually almost burn like a candle. It's long burning. Grass, it's going to burn up quickly on you. Bark scraps, they're going to be a bit longer burning and probably a little bit harder to start. So if you can find, you know, birch or poplar bark, yeah, it's good stuff for getting a fire going. And there's is one other thing is that I have, you know, note in here, is the inner bark of some pine trees. Again, if you can get some of the bark off, you can scrape some of that out. It's almost, well, if you scrape it out, it's almost like fibers. And again, you can light that fairly quickly. Speaking of fibers, another thing that's sometimes handy to carry with you, you know, say for example you have yourself a small survival kit. One thing that's good to throw in is some like some jute twine, you know, J-U-T-E. You know, a lot of places, if you're asking for some cords or whatever, you know, that's the type of thing they try handing you. So, the jute, if you unravel it, fray it, again, you have a nice pile of fibers that will light quickly. Let's see here. Yeah, let's see, moving down a little bit further. Okay, next thing I have on here in the list is wood scraps and slivers. Again, I imagine most of you, if not all of you, probably have a knife that you carry with you, either in your pocket or, for you ladies, in your purses. And one small piece of wood, you can actually shave it off and split it down. Take some care, of course, you know, because you don't want to cut yourself. But it'll work. You can shave it off in fine enough pieces. Again, makes a very good tinder. And let's see, when Concretin was talking with Bobby the other day, he was talking about being in the Boy Scouts when he was younger, you know, and motto, you know, being prepared and all that. Yeah, I remember from when I was in the Boy Scouts, they used to have, trying to remember the name of it, I believe they called it a fuzz stick. Basically, what you do is with that is take a piece of wood and you'd basically shave it up, and without cutting the pieces all off the stick, you'd basically start at one end and start cutting it, and these curls would curl up, and you'd work as far up on the stick as you could get. Basically, what you'd end up with is something that almost looks like a pine cone. Again, very good tinder, and very good for fire starting. Again, once you get your really fine slivers of wood going, then you got your wood scraps, you feed the fire with your kindling until you get a good fire going, and you can start putting larger wood on. And down here, I'm going to talk with the last two here in combination. First one here is char cloth. And you'll see a lot of people at reenacting events. They'll be selling little fire starting kits, and a lot of times they'll have some char cloth in there. Char cloth is pretty good, but it's can be hard to start. You know, you have to tear off a small piece and then, again, put that on some tinder or some little bit thicker stuff. You shower it with sparks, and hopefully you can get a coal started. You have to breathe on it gently and, you know, feed the fire. And admittedly, char cloth, it doesn't take up much space. takes up very little space. I've seen a lot of people with little kits made from Altoid tins, where they'll have a piece of flint in there, piece of steel, and char cloth. A lot of people have used those over the last probably, well, for sure over the last 300-400 years in this country. You know, most of the early pioneers, that's what they had, you know, to try and start fires with. And they did it. They survived. But today, we have something, like I said, that's much more common, and that's lint. You know, from your local dryer, your pockets, or even the local area laundromat. You know, they always want to get rid of that stuff. It's, you know, it's fluffy, it's light, and it's a pain in the neck for them. But like I showed you a little bit further up on the page here, it lights, and it lights rapidly. It's good stuff. And lint, actually, you know, what you get out of a dryer, it's not going to be just straight cotton fibers or wool fibers, whatever. These days, with the variety of clothing we have, you're going to find the stuff that's, it's got, you know, synthetics in there, it's got cotton in there, probably even got old gum wrappers if you got kids, and they forget to take their gum wrappers out of their pockets, and a lot of times shredded paper. And by the way, one I didn't put on here is because, well, just because, everybody's seen it. Crumpled up Kleenexes, or paper towels, or even just regular white paper. All these can be used as tinder as well. The plain sheet white paper, obviously it's going to be harder to start, but, you know, Kleenexes, napkins, things of that sort, yes, they will light easier. You can get a coal started on them, and then again, it's like using the char cloth. You have to blow on it gently and feed the fire little by little by little to get it going. Okay, so let me do this here. Let me take a quick peek at the time here, and we're just about out of time. I'm seeing, what is it, 9:56 already, so I'm just going to go zap through the rest of this fairly quickly. Okay, traveler survival kits. It's a good thing to be carrying with you when you're traveling. Here to the, again, to the right side, you'll see three photos. And they just, I know they don't look like they're connected, but they are. Top photo, you see a medicine bottle there, and it's just kind of demonstrating it a little bit. In that medicine or pill bottle, it's gray at one end. What that is, that's a bunch of lint that was stuffed down in there. These are the Strike Anywhere matches. And if you have some Strike Anywhere matches, you can actually carry them with you in a pill bottle like this. And the lint in the bottom serves two purposes. One, it gives you a ready source of tinder. Secondly, it cushions those matches. And so once you get your, you know, half a dozen, you know, 20 matches stuck in the bottle, with the heads down in the lint, take the rest of the bottle and fill it full of with some more lint. Just kind of push it in there good and tight. That way those matches aren't going to rattle around and possibly strike off of each other. Makes for a fairly, you know, stable fire source where you don't have to worry about it igniting in your pocket. Plus, pill bottles are generally fairly watertight, so they're going to stay dry, and they're going to stay fresh, and they're not going to be lighting themselves off. Below that, again, Bic lighters. You know, yeah, I know Mom gives us guys who still have the bad habit of smoking a hard time about Bic lighters. But this sound, yep, a lighter. It's that quick and easy. You know, if you have a functional Bic lighter, you can light a fire, usually. You know, just need something that's relatively dry. Now, over to the right side, again, it's basically, I have one of the magnesium fire starters, you know, basically disassembled. The saw blade is laying next to the magnesium block chain next to it there, which holds the two pieces together normally. And above it is some more lint. Again, if you are traveling, it's a good thing just to throw in your glove box. You know, throw a little Ziploc bag or a small box of some sort in that's got a handful of lint in a plastic bag, your fire starter. You got a fire source, you know, that could possibly save your life. And the last one for the night is the two pictures that are down below there. Common, everyday, ordinary steel wool and a 9-volt battery. And these, yes, I would definitely recommend keep them separated. Put them in plastic bags or leave the 9-volt battery in this package. But when you need a good fire source on short order, you can take part of that steel wool pad, you know, peel a little bit off, fluff it up, and kind of string it out like you're pulling yarn. Once you have it kind of pulled out like that, and obviously leave yourself a little bit there to hold on to, you bridge across the terminals of a 9-volt battery. 9 volts is more than enough to heat that steel wool up by shorting it across there to where it'll actually start burning. Once you have that lit up, again, get it into some other tinder, feed the fire, and you'd be good to go. And it doesn't use that much power, so that battery's going to last you a long time. So, let's see. I think we're just... Yes, we are. It's 10 o'clock here. So, I think we're going to have to save how to make homemade fire starters for next week. I do apologize, but I think this is something that we all should learn about, how to make fire starters. You know, tonight, obviously, had to do my rant there earlier, and then, you know, kind of gave you kind of a brief introduction to, you know, how to make a fire if you're somewhere where you need one really badly. So, again, thank you very much for joining me here in the Tinker's Shop here for Saturday night, the 4th of January, 2014. And I'm going to go ahead here and just get a little something going here. I think what I'll do is I'll just go ahead and do my background music, and then we'll go ahead and fade out, and we'll get the archives going. So, again, thank you very much for joining me. God bless, and have a very good, a very safe week to come. Take care.
Remember, we all are the library for those who come after us. We must never forget to teach those who need our knowledge.
Guns, self-defense, survival, current events, and your future.
Can't take me. Yeah!
We're rapidly approaching desperate times. Have you prepared your family physically, mentally, spiritually to face these times? Tyrant has overstepped his authority. What will you do when he comes to your door?
You can't take me, I'm free. Oh, yeah, I'm free.
Please join us here on Just Measures Radio Network, for the Shooting Bench, Monday through Friday, 5 p.m.
Pacific Time.
It's easy to take liberty for granted when you've never had it taken from you.